This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Jason Silverman. He's director of the Cinematheque at the CCA, and he's co-writer, director, and producer of the film Sem Ben, which premiered about a year ago. It's been shown in film festivals all over the world, including the Cannes Film Festival and Sundance and many others, to great acclaim. And it's screening tomorrow night, Friday the 29th of January, at 7 o'clock at the Lenzick Center for Performing Arts. It's a benefit for the CCA. Welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you, and it's such an exciting thing for, I think, for us Santa Feans to witness. Is here we have a hometown filmmaker, you, who have basically been working on this. You worked on this film for 7 years. It's about Usman Semben, who is really the father of African cinema. How did you come across his story, and how did you come to make this film?
Well, his story is, it's an amazing story, first of all. We'll come back to that in a second. But I met his biographer through another film festival, and we hit it off instantly. That's Samba Gajigo, who's my co-producer, co-writer, co-director. And I invited Samba to Santa Fe to show some of Sem Ben's films. And I was amazed by Sem Ben's story. It was the story of a man with a fifth grade education who had been a manual laborer for 25 years and then broke his back working on as a dock worker. And when he broke his back, he started reading. He learned how to read. Not a good reader, but he started reading voraciously as he's recuperating. And he fell in love with literature, except for the absence of Africans in world literature. So this dock worker with a fifth grade education decided he would ameliorate that situation and teach himself how to write.
Now, he was from Senegal, and this is a country where, as he explains it, there were lots of stories, and it's such an interesting thing to contemplate, at least for me, you know, watching the film and hearing about his story, being an African with a rich tradition, but having the rich traditions around you being represented as the French, as the European, as the colonizers. And he really is responsible in many ways for the very idea that African traditions, Senegalese traditions, can be and should be represented in film and in literature for the incredible traditions that they are.
Well, his first poem, the first thing he ever wrote, was called Liberté. And it basically talks about just that. It says, you know, the Asian culture has their heroes and literature and monuments, and Europe has theirs, and America has theirs. Where's Africa's? And we need to build Africa's. We need to forge a new nation. And this was the moment of independence, or the quest for independence. This is 1956, a year before the Algerians stand up to the French, which is the first real revolutionary action. And kind of the spark for the independence movement across Africa. So people are starting to think about an independent Africa, and he's thinking, for an independent Africa, we need to be able to tell our own stories. And that's what he set out to do.
So where was he at the time that he broke his back?
He was living in Marseille. He had snuck aboard a ship and left Senegal for France.
Why did he do that?
One was opportunity.
Like how anybody might migrate for economic,
it's the immigrant story.
Yeah,
you know, there was nothing for him to do in Senegal. He had been in manual labor already since age 14. He also wanted to see the world and experience the world and learn. He was a very curious person. I mean, he was self-taught, but widely read. And so when he got to Africa, to France, he immersed himself in European culture. You know, he'd go to avant-garde theater and got involved in the labor union, the French labor union, and studied Marxism. And he was just, he was a curious man, and he was driven. And so this combination of ideas that he was soaking in and revolutionary fervor of the moment for Africans, really, that's what created Ousmane Sembène.
And they are, I think at the same time, his films, very African, but also very much of a hybrid, because as you say, he was influenced by Marxism. He was influenced by all kinds of European traditions.
His first film really looks like a French New Wave film. His first feature, his first short film looks like an Italian neorealist film. So he was obviously soaking that in, but he was very motivated to make a cinema that represented Africa. He wanted his films to look like Africa, to speak to Africans. And they do, you know, at least to me as an American, and Samba Gajigo, my partner, says this is, you know, an African cinema. And just to go back a moment and think about Sembène's life and career, you know, he taught himself how to write, and he became a fairly successful novelist. We have clips in the movie of him, you know, in 1957, after writing his first novel on French TV. So he was a sensation. He was the dock worker who wrote novels.
And he stopped being a manual laborer.
He was still working on the docks while he was writing.
Oh, was he?
He was. After independence, he moved back to Africa. It's 1960. And he realizes that writing novels is not going to do it. So he needs to make movies because his audience is illiterate and they can't afford the books. So storytelling had to take a new form. And, you know, Africans had never been represented in cinema in any way except for stereotypical ways.
Right.
You know, it was 100 years of stereotypes that he faced. So what does it look like to go over there? First of all, a guy with no experience. There's no cameras in West Africa. There's no labs. There's no crew.
Right.
There's no money.
What did he do? How did he do it?
He got a scholarship to Moscow and studied for 6 months at one of the major studios with Sergei Eisenstein's assistant. He came back with a case with a 16-millimeter camera, a 16-millimeter camera from the Soviet Union, and he called his friends in Europe and said, can you please send me whatever 16-millimeter film you could find? And then he went out and shot. He borrowed money. He hid from people who he borrowed money from. He asks his neighbors and his friends and his family to be in the film and to help him carry things. And he made his first movies that way.
And the stories have a lot of different things going on, including real deep African traditions and very tough stories of oppression and racism.
Yeah. Well, he was, as much as any artist I can think of, unafraid. He was not afraid of authority. And in fact, any suggestion of abuse of authority was a provocation to him. He just did not like abuses of power. And so he spent most of his career fighting against them. And no one would escape, you know, not the French colonizers, not the African businessmen who sold out their countrymen, not the imams and Islamic heads. I mean, he made the first film that was anti-Islam. You know, this is 1976. It's 15 years before Satanic Verses.
Right.
Not the Senegalese president. Nobody escaped. If you were a hypocrite, he would find you. And
corrupt leaders.
To him, you know, as a trained Marxist, the people had to band together to create a level playing field. And he saw himself as their spokesperson.
So you came across this story. You came across Ousmane Sembène's biographer, Samba Gajigo, who you've been working with for all of these years, and who, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, has written a book called Ousmane Sembène, The Making of a Militant Artist, which spans part of, but not the whole of, Sembène's life. And maybe there will be
a second part.
Yeah,
there
this
will
is volume
be a second
one.
Volume.
Okay, good. So what did you do? I mean, did you start by watching all of Sembène's films?
I had already
73
watched them.
Times? Or?
You know, when Sembène died in 2007, and I called Samba and I said, Tonton, which is, you know, the Wolof word for uncle, because he's a figure, you know.
He's an uncle figure for you.
He's an uncle figure, familial figure. I said, my deep condolences for Semben's death, and, you know, I know he's grateful for all the work you've done, because Samba has dedicated most of his adult life to preserving Semben's legacy. And he said, you know, I've got this big box of tapes I've shot over the last 17 years while I've been working with Semben and following him around the world. And you want to do something with them with me? And I said, absolutely, let's make a movie. And that was the beginning of it. And I had already at that point become obsessed with Semben as a independent filmmaker, as a world cinema figure, as a media activist, as, you know, a hero, a storytelling hero. You know, to me, the people who resist the commodity culture, they're the real heroes.
Right.
You know, and Semben was, you know, there's a lot of people who are telling stories out in the world that are stories of resistance. But I can't think of anyone more than, you know, more determined and more successful at it than Semben was, and who faced longer odds. So I just thought it was a great story to tell. I said, let's make a film. And so we set out to do that. I'd watched the films, I'd read the books. So we just talked about how we can tell the story.
Now, Samba was a friend, a protege. Was he going to be a filmmaker in Semben's tradition, or did he always, I mean, was he following Semben around to be his biographer? What was that relationship?
Samba's story is interesting, and we tell some of it in the film. Samba grew up in a small village on the border of Senegal and Mali, and it was far, far from European civilization. You know, there's no electricity, there's no running water, there was no TVs, there was no radios, there were no newspapers. There was the you know, what you would imagine to be a traditional West African culture. That's now, what he grew up in.
Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, the man is now a professor at Mount Holyoke College.
The whole story there, too.
Yeah.
So, but he was a star student, and so he was plucked out of his village and sent to the National High School. And it was there that he was forbidden to speak his native languages, where the entire curriculum was European. You know, he studied French history, French literature, etc. No African content whatsoever. So he was living in the school where the whole world was European, and then he'd walk out the door of the school onto the streets where he was in Africa.
So it was just really a kind of parallel life of Semben's own life.
It was in some ways, yeah. And so Samba was given Semben's great novel, and that was the light bulb moment for Samba.
Yeah.
Where he said, well, I have my own culture, I have my own value. And he was dedicated to Semben at that moment. A lot of the kids who study in these Senegalese high schools and who go on to college are studying practical thing, you know, they want to become business people or doctors or engineers. And Samba decided to study African literature and culture.
And so the two of you then spent 7 years making this documentary about Semben's life, which has in it a balance of Semben's story, clips from his films, Samba's own journey. He's very much a character in the film. You're more behind the scenes, Jason Silverman. And it is its own kind of beautiful exercise in storytelling.
Yeah, it was a challenge to get it right. You know, we had to get the right team together to get it right, because there are a lot of things happening, and it unfolds over, you know, 80-year period, and it's an 80-year period where there's a lot of history happening too.
Now, Semben, this film has come out, and a lot of people probably who had never heard of Semben before are seeing this film all around the United States, all around the world. And I wondered, for example, have you been showing it to African-American young people and people who might really be interested in the kind of people who were speaking up against another kind of colonial route?
We've just started doing that. You know, the last year has been about getting the film properly situated, you know, with its release, et cetera. So there's a lot that you need to do to pay for a film like this.
Yeah.
We have done a few high school screenings. We did one in the Bronx at a high school that's entirely immigrant, first-generation immigrant kids. A lot of kids from West Africa, from Central America, from Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Goodness. How did they respond?
They loved it. And the teacher there wants to build a curriculum out of the film because it covers a lot of issues that are relevant to these kids. Sembin's films really speak to people who have been marginalized. I used to show Sembin's films at the IAIA where I was an adjunct. And, you know, I'd show them all films from across cinema history. And they'd always react most strongly to the Sembin films because they were telling the same kind of stories that these kids lived.
Yeah,
they understood
it.
They're timeless in that way.
One of the things that I think is interesting about this film, and of course, here we are in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This is the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. The film is being shown tomorrow night at the Lenzik Center for Performing Arts. And although this might not be visible to people in other cities or other places in the world, it is a Santa Fe film in certain ways.
It's totally a Santa Fe film. You know, Samba's from West Africa. I grew up, you know, I'm a Jewish guy, grew up in Connecticut. Ricardo, our editor, is from Cuba and living in Toronto. Our animator is from Australia. You know, most of the shooting was done in West Africa. It's a West African story. But at its heart and soul, this is still a Santa Fe film.
How does that, what does that mean to you? Like, how do you feel that?
Well, you know, I've probably asked about 2/3 of the people who live in the town for money at some point in the last 7 years, or to borrow their car, or, you know, when we had crew in Santa Fe, you know, when we had the edit sessions, we were working late and people would just bring by big pots of stew for us to eat. Kirk Ellis let us use his house so we could let people stay there while they were visiting. And we've got a lot of support from Santa Fe. And Santa Fe is, relatively speaking, an uncynical place. So when we tell the story to people here, they really got it. They related to the story. When we were trying to get it together, when we were raising money, when we were looking for support, Samba or I would, you know, sit down with people and say, this is what this is about. And people would say, how can I support you? And it wasn't what I imagine you might get in, you know, New York or LA, which is, how can I support you and what's in it for me? It was, how can I support you? How can I make this story happen because it's an important story? And in that way, Santa Fe is at the heart and soul of this film.
How nice to live in an relatively uncynical city, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And the cynical scale, it's,
it's way
low.
Down there.
Yeah, climbing like everywhere else, but we're lagging. We're lagging in cynicism.
And may we continue to do so. Well, the film is called Sembin. It is screening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Lenzik Center for Performing Arts. It's a benefit for the CCA. Jason Silverman is co-writer, director, and producer of the film, and he's also director of the Cinematheque at the CCA. When all this quiets down, are you going to just go back to curating films? And
well, I never stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah. People say, what are you going to do next? And I said, first I'm going to clean my kitchen. It's been a long, hard road, and it's been, you know, a financial strain too on all of us. But yeah, you know, we really want to get the film out into the world in a significant way. Samba found one of Sembin's books when he was 17 years old, and it changed his life. And I think it's Samba's dream, and of course mine too, that this film that we made, Sembin the documentary, will reach some young people and maybe alter their course for the better in some way.
Jason Silverman, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was a great pleasure. We'll see you guys tomorrow night.
Excellent. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.